Get ready for some fun. This is Malcolm and You Know Who with Malcolm Out Loud. Open-minded discussion that's truthful, respectful, and direct. This is real life on the brink of greatness.
Well, how do you know if someone is really interested in what you're saying? And how much does body language play into your influence? And can certain smells turn men on? Well, we're going to learn the answers to those and a whole lot more today. It's Malcolm Out Loud. Welcome to the show. You know, we've got a lot to do today. I got a fantastic guest coming on talking about educating our kids and what we can do as parents and coaches and teachers and just everybody to help. He's got a unique experience and something that ties into the whole internet, our kids, and we know they like to be online, don't we now? So, you know, I've got this interesting piece here, 24 scientific ways to influence people without saying a word. Imagine if you could influence folks around you without saying anything. That would be kind of cool, and it certainly would empower you as well. So we're going to get right to it here, and I'm going to give you some of these on the list, and we'll post the whole article up on our Twitter feed as well for you to check out. Well, do you want to know if someone is interested? Watch their pupils. Yeah, I didn't know this, but the pupils are one part of our eye body language we have practically no control over. Eckhard Hess, back in 1975, found that the pupil dilates when we are interested in the person we're talking to, or at least interested in what they're talking about. So I guess if somebody knew this and you watched the pupils, you'd really know if they're engaged or not. Kind of fascinating. Well, the next one, wondering if a person is into you, look at their feet. That's kind of strange. I never thought to look at their feet. You know, most people know to keep their facial expressions in check, but they don't pay attention to what their feet are doing. So if somebody's feet are pointed directly toward you, it's a sign of genuine interest. Pointing at the door, not so much. You know, I have to be honest with you, I don't think I've ever heard that before. But you know, I think there's some common sense to that. I think about it myself when I'm sitting with somebody and I don't really care for them. I could see me doing that. And if I'm really engaged, I probably open up more toward the person. So I bet you there's some truth to that one, number 23. Number 22, if you want to be trusted, wear blue. If you want to be jumped, wear red. I find this a bit strange. Well, you know, actually, they always say when you have a red sports car, you're liable to get more speeding tickets and that sort of thing. So there's probably truth to this one as well. I'm sure there is. Actually, every color in the Crayola crayon box there tells us is there's a whole bunch of adjectives behind each color, and it mimics something in our life. So there's passions and feelings behind every color you look at or you kind of emulate. So blue makes you seem trustworthy, conservative, secure, and clean. Red, on the other hand, gives off power, energy, and danger, and inspires feeling of passion and love. Well, I think we all need a little bit of blue and a little bit of red in our lives, both, quite honestly. So, well, you ever wonder about somebody's political views? Sure you do. Shift your gaze. Never thought of this either. But if a person follows your eyes when you look away, it means they are likely liberal. Conservatives will be much less likely to shift their gaze. Wow. Well, I'll tell you what, that one's fascinating to me. And you could read a whole lot more into that one, but we're going to move it along here. Number 20. This one I understand. Service who touch their customers get better tips. And this I agree with. Studies show that servers receive higher tips when they touch customers lightly on the shoulder, hand, or arm. There's a lot of truth to this one. There's something about the human touch. When you do touch somebody, people, in the right way, I mean, obviously you got to watch your hands and where they go, but you got to be the right moment. But I think this can be used to your satisfaction to influence one. It shows you're open. It shows you care. There are a lot of things that show when you lightly touch somebody. I think when you're in sales, you realize that early on, and you probably use that to your ability. This one I didn't realize, this next one, but it makes a lot of sense to me. Number 19, tilt your head back to take charge. Now, sounds really strange when you first hear it, but think about it. Studies show that the more you bow your head, the more submissive you seem. And the more you tilt your head back, the more dominant you appear. I think there's a lot of truth to this one. So the next time you see somebody sort of bowing their head, it's probably more submissive. And yet, the opposite is when you tilt it back, you're empowered, engaged. Interesting, you know. Number 18, time of day affects whether people are lying. So, according to a new study, people who are tired are more likely to lie, cheat, and act unethically. Well, it also concluded that morning people are more likely to lie at night, and night owls, well, they are more likely to lie in the morning. So I guess it's when we are at the least resistance, we let our guard down, and we tend to lie. Now, for me, I consider myself both a morning person and an evening person, both. So you ain't going to catch me lying, kids. Just the out loud truth, huh? All right, now, number 17 on this list. Want to look important? Sure, we all do. Spread out. Powerful people take up lots of space. They splay their arms and legs, make broad gestures, and generally fill the room. In fact, tall people are statistically more likely to rise higher in their professions than shorter people. Now, there's something wrong with that one. I agree, it's probably true, but I don't know. There's something that just doesn't sound right just because of your height that you can go long, you know, further in your profession. I don't know. I know there's truth to it. I hear it. I've seen the studies on it. I know there's truth to it. But anyways, number 16, I'll give you, if you want somebody to trust you, let them speak first. Makes sense. You can do this by asking a question. And I used to do this when I networked and stuff in the big networking events. You learned this over time. This is maturity here, because as a young person, you just keep talking and you don't know to let somebody talk back. So, but yielding the floor makes the other person feel warmth toward you and as though they're being heard and understood. I kind of agree with this one, I think, here, you know. Number 15 is most fascinating, the smells. We talk about the smells of what turns men on. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to give you the answer to this one back in the final segment, because this one is fascinating. I never knew these smells, but I don't know, kind of interesting to me. Yeah, it is. I kind of find it fascinating. But anyways, before we get to that in our final segment, we're going to bring you on in the next segment a very interesting man. And, you know, we talk about teaching our kids, and we talk about how to better do that. Well, kids, they see coaches and teachers as mentors, psychologists, surrogate parents, referees, friends even. Next, you'll meet a man who is changing the way we teach our kids, and you'll know who on the other side of the break. Well, our kids are spending the bulk of their time on technology. Some reports have kids spending as much as 12 hours a day on their phones and searching the internet on their tablets and computers. If we could take some of this time now and use it to bolster their learning habits for the good, well, it would certainly help increase their school grades and give them a boost in the learning curve, I think. It's Malcolm Allow. Welcome back again. I want to introduce you to the Who. Please meet Will Rame. And Will is a lifelong tennis pro and entrepreneur. He has written 4 books, even a movie script. His dream is to help people learn how to communicate better and understand the psychology of interpersonal communications. He's created Life Lesson Coaching. And this is for everybody. This is for coaches and teachers and parents, but most importantly, it's for the kids. So we're going to talk to him now on this. And Will, welcome. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Malcolm. Very glad to be here again.
Yeah, it's thrilled to have you here. So let me ask you, what is the Voyager series? What is it?
Well, the Voyager series was developed a few years back to really help children learn how to retain more of what they read and find reading to be fun. And every chapter is connected to the internet to where they can solve a puzzle, and if after they solve it, they can play a game and then go back to the chapter. And it was all designed because of my experience that I had with the school systems, the public school systems.
You know, you bring up a good point that I want to touch on this first. It's hard to keep the kids' attention, I find. You know, we talk about in the school with the little ones, Will, you hear this term a lot about ADD, but, you know, I think we all have it. We all have sort of an attention deficit disorder to some degree. Specifically the kids, I find it's real hard to keep their attention. And you bring up a valid point with that. So I would assume by using the internet and the way you're using it through this coaching process, that's got to be a big help.
That's exactly what the whole idea is, because right now we have science and technology that has exploded. It's gone, you know, geometrically exploded out there. And the people that it's hurting the most are the children, because they're not learning how to read. They're not writing. And so as a result, if you just take a look at the polls when it comes to education, the United States is at the very bottom of the industrial countries when it comes to education.
Yeah. No, I have read reports. We are struggling in these areas. And basically, it's the reading, write, and arithmetic. It's the three R's a lot. It's the basic stuff, pretty much. I think that is a bit of a struggle. But I think a lot of the challenge is, again, that we lose attention. The kids lose attention. It's hard to keep focused. But also, they're spending so many hours on technology. I am blown away with the fact, I mean, let alone the adults, we all spend so much time, but the kids, I mean, and they're so impressionable in the young, early ages that I worry about it because they're spending countless hours on the internet. So let's talk about how you were able to take this idea. Now, you are a pro tennis player. I mean, you did this in a big way, and somehow you've seen a connection. Now, I'm assuming, I don't know all this, so you correct me if I'm wrong, but I assume you've seen a connection with basic coaching level, you know, teaching people things and how to connect that back with the internet and trying to help our kids out. How did the whole thing kind of get off the ground initially? What was the spark where you said, oh my, this is really interesting, I can do something with this?
Well, it really started when I was teaching a clinic, and I was working with the children.
When you say a clinic, you're talking a tennis clinic?
A tennis clinic,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Teaching a tennis clinic with about 15 kids.
Okay.
And, you know, I'm having a great time. These are young, impressionable kids.
Right.
And it didn't seem right. There was something wrong. You know, I've written the books, the Voyager series, and a lot of them have that, but I'm just teaching them tennis. I'm not teaching them other things. And I have plenty of time to help them with it when it comes to life lessons.
So wait a minute. Hold on. This is a great point now. So I can just imagine this. I really can. So you're on the tennis courts. You got the kids out there. All of a sudden the light bulb goes off because you realize there are so many things. And part of this is, and let me say this, it's because sports in general, and I think all sports will. I don't care if it's tennis, football, basketball, baseball. It doesn't matter what it is. There are so many life lessons within our sports. Let's face it. There are. And I talk about it all the time, using them as metaphors. I could see where you would be doing that, and you would say to yourself, you know, I know, you know, you're passionate. You start talking to the kids, and then you realize there's got to be something more to this thing and how we can help them use these metaphors in sports to learn and have a better quality learning experience, huh?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, every life lesson is written with the background of generic sports.
Okay.
And what that does is it takes away any type of controversy. Everybody can understand sports. It just makes it easier for kids to understand and adults. And so I use generic sports because I want all coaches to be able to use this. I never sign them. It's signed coach, period. And so it can come from any coach. It doesn't matter. And any sport. And so the idea is the coach doesn't have to do anything except read it and provide it to the children, we have an opportunity, maybe even an obligation, to get it out there as fast as we can. And if we can help one, two, three, four kids, whatever it is, then we're doing something that is proactive on a global basis.
Yeah, or how about 10, 20, 30, 40,000 kids, huh?
Exactly.
I mean, come on, you know, there's a lot of numbers out there and a lot of kids. Let's talk about from the parents' role now. How parents can be involved in this and how they can help stimulate this whole thing. Because let's face it, a lot of the parents are busy. Everybody's working now. And a lot of this learning has to come from when they're home, not just when they're in the school environment or the coaching environment. How do the parents benefit by this?
Well, that was the surprising thing when I started this thing. I put a contract together and I made all the students' parents sign it, stating that I would kick out a weekly one-page life lesson. So it's not hard. We're not talking about pages. We're just talking one page.
Okay.
Simple. But the contract stated that the parent had to read it with the child and they had to sign off on it every week. because it's written at a fairly high level, and I want the children to be able to ask questions, get their insight from their parents, and be able to also tell the parents what they think about it as well. And that's the best way to bond, as well as be able to learn a particular life lesson.
Yeah. All right. When you, you know, some of this, people are hearing it and wondering, you know, because I know I was when I first heard about it and seen what you were doing. I had seen a couple of emails of yours, and I said, wow, this guy has really taken this forward and done something unique with this. And, you know, we talk a lot about in this country about learning our kids, about education and the lack thereof. And how to help bolster all of this. And the fact, you know, many people believe we're falling behind more and more. So let's break it down. I want to get back to the basics of so everybody really understands what we're talking about here. Let's bring it back. What's the first step? I want to get to the first few steps now of how they how it works. This is how it works. How does it work? What do they do? How do they get involved? Give me the 1, 2, 3s.
Yeah, it's really, really simple, and that's the whole key. It's got to be simple or people aren't going to do it.
That's right.
And so basically you just sign up. It's free. And every week, every Saturday afternoon, you will be emailed a PDF file, which will be a life lesson. And that life lesson, then they open it and they read it to the children.
When you say they, this is the parents or the coach or both?
Both.
Whoever it is then, right?
Right.
So
right.
The parents become the coaches, you're saying, yeah?
Absolutely.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
And originally the concept was, you know, give it to the coaches so they can give it to the kids and work that way. But I found out that so many adults, I mean, we're talking physicians, we're talking business owners, spouses, you name it, got into this, that it just opened the door to a much larger group than I ever imagined. And so now... everybody gets, coaches get actually a little bit different package, if you will.
Oh, do they?
Yeah. They get additional things that might be able to help them in their coaching career. But it's all seamless. It doesn't take any of their time. And, I mean, we go over everything. I mean, we go over anger, anxiety part one and part two. We talk about bullying, and we talk about character.
Wait a minute, you talk about bullying, too.
Absolutely.
Right, hold on. That's a big thing. That's something I've covered a lot in my platform. So I want to talk more about that as well. Okay. We're speaking with Will Rehm, again, lifelong tennis pro and entrepreneur. He's got this unique series, the Voyager series. I love this concept of coaching and using the internet to get to our kids. I think you folks will, too. We'll return and continue the conversation with Will Rehm in just a moment. Okay, we're back, and we're talking with Will Rehm again. And let me tell you about Will. He's a lifelong tennis pro and entrepreneur. God, I wish I could play tennis as a pro. I love the game, but so he's written 4 books, even a movie script. And again, his dream in all of this is to help people learn how to communicate better and understand the psychology of interpersonal communications, which we can all use, my friends. He's created these life lesson coaching for obviously coaches, teachers, but parents, and most importantly, the kids. So again, I'm going to give you the website now, folks, so you write it down. You can check it out, lifelessoncoaching.com. Three W's dot lifelessoncoaching.com. It's called the Voyager series. And again, I think what Will has done here is very, very unique in the way, you know, listen, America, we love sports. We all love sports. I mean, it doesn't matter. We just love sports in this country. And the fact that he's been able to take sports and apply it to the simple fundamentals of life and to be able to help teach the kids, but also tie the internet in and do some of this game playing back and forth where the kids are learning. I would imagine sometimes they probably don't even know they're learning. Maybe they're just having fun. Is that a stretch, Will, or is that close?
That's exactly what it is.
Is that right? I hit it? I don't know. I'm guessing.
Right on the head. The whole concept is on the Voyager series, everything that's written in those books are accurate. But the kids, they're reading a fast-paced adventure. They don't even know that it's real and that... the, you know, the geography and the whole all of the math, the science, the history, all of it's real.
It's real.
So they learn, and they don't even know it.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. Well, you know, I kind of do that a lot with the media and my two. Now, my two kids are, they're 12 and 13, Will. And, you know, they are learning so much around them. And but, you know, I mean, they see it all. They see life. They see business. They see politics. And, you know, they see everything because Malcolm's involved in everything like that. And so, you know, I kind of use real life stuff like that, too. One of the things we talked about before the break that intrigues me, and it's one of the topics I've talked about on my platform, Will, I've had experts in it from time to time, is bullying. And bullying's a real problem out there. And I imagine all the way into the sports world, I imagine bullying is a problem, probably even in the sports world, I would think. You probably know more about it than I do. But tell me how you're helping accomplish some of the fears and some of the anxieties when it comes to bullying in this.
Well, first of all, let me just give you the idea behind the one-page life lesson. There's the definition of the word. Everybody knows what bullying means, typically. There's the symptom. In other words, what does that particular word, what's the bad thing or the good thing about that word? And then there's the solution. And the solutions aren't written by me. I go out and I do research, and I find the very best of the best. I paraphrase what they say, and I put it in there so that we really have really good information so that you can learn how not to or how to do something when it comes to these life lessons. And in bullying, the thing about bullying, if you took away hockey, you would find that there's kind of a unique situation in sports. If you are a bully in sports, one, the coach probably won't allow it. And two, the people that you play against or with aren't going to play with you very long. So it has its own kind of way of checks and balances. But in life, in school, oh my goodness, it is unbelievable what's going on, and it's getting worse. And the average, and this is going to blow, I know you probably know this, but the average mass killing in this world is one a day. And, you know, where does that come from? It comes from kids that are not educated in communications. It's one of our biggest problems we have on a global basis. And so they feel entitled because maybe they had, they've been bullied. And so if I've been bullied, I can bully somebody else. They don't understand what it means and what the psychology of it is and how it not only makes them look bad, but how it hurts the other person.
Well, Will, you bring up some big, big points there I didn't even consider, and you just opened my eyes even more so about this because you're right in many, many ways. We don't know. We a lot of these kids are introverts, and they don't come out of their shells, or they've been bullied badly, and they're not really understanding life to that degree, and then they get to a point and they lash out at people. That is a valid, valid point, huh?
Absolutely, that's what that's what we're dealing with, and you know, somehow we've got to stop this. And our plan is, you know, give us a few years, and we'll have life lessons in every different language, and have it around the world.
So you're working on different languages now, is that right? What languages is it available now in?
Right now, it's just English.
I see. But you're working on okay, got it. And yeah, I would think these skills apply to anybody, anywhere, no matter what country they're from, obviously, right?
Absolutely. I mean, we've got everything from fear and failure and frustration. We have, you know, everything. Listening, as an example. We have listening part one and part two. People don't understand listening.
Well, that's because we don't really listen as a society. We worry about what we're going to say next before we really listen to the words. In fact, I remind myself all the time when I'm talking to a very interesting guest to listen to what they're saying, because they're saying great things normally. But a lot of times we're not focused on it. We're too worried about what we're going to say next, Will. And that's part of the problem, you know?
It really is.
Yeah. And I always tell the kids, you have two ears and one mouth. Now, why don't you listen twice as much as you talk? now, that doesn't work so well for talk radio people, keep in mind.
No, it doesn't.
But, all right. So people, when they want to find out more, obviously, that you go to the website, lifelessoncoaching.com. But, and then how automated is this process? Do they actually sign up there on the website, or is there some other approach to it, Will?
No, they just sign up. I just need their email and their contact information. I don't give it out to anybody. I'm just not that way.
But they sign up there.
They sign up there. I get notified. I put them on the list, and then every week they get a life lesson.
And this is kind of automated then. They get the life lesson every week. They get into a system of yours, huh?
Exactly. It's automated.
Now, do they pay for this or what?
No.
Really?
No.
So you provide this at no cost to people?
No, I mean, I do ask for a donation, but, you know, it really, I don't, why? The whole concept is to pass it forward. And if people can help me, that's great. But I'm not charging a thing for it.
But you don't base that on them having it or not having it. Donation is up to them.
Exactly.
Well, that's pretty wild. So that's how you've done this thing. It's too bad you couldn't, I'm sure you're probably working on having some big sponsors involved or something. That would be a way to leverage it, huh?
Well, I'm working with some large sports foundations right
now. Cool. Yeah. Wonderful. Well, they have a means to get it out there as well. Well, again, as we wrap up here, Will Rame again in the Voyager series. I've been watching his progress, folks, over the past months and months. Actually, been a few years now that you've been doing this. So, Will, thanks for joining me here. We'll have you back again to talk more about this. There's so much to dive into with this. It's called the Voyager Series again, lifelessoncoaching.com. You find out more right there. We'll be right back after the break, folks. Well, I certainly am learning a few things this afternoon. I hope you are too. It's Malcolm All Out here again. Welcome. This is Real Life on the Brink of Greatness. And great guest today. I've learned a few things with him, but love this influence series we talked about. And, you know, I left you hanging. I'm sorry about that. But in the first part of the show here, this piece we have here, 24 Scientific Ways to Influence People Without Saying a Word. Well, we were at, shared a few of them with you already, but this one here is kind of cool. This were the smells I teased you with about which smells turned men on is the question. Well, the smells of lavender and pumpkin pie. Lavender and pumpkin pie turn men on. Would you have guessed? Well, a study by the Smell and Taste Treatment and Research Foundation found that the scent of lavender and pumpkin pie caused a 40% increase in penile blood flow. Second on the list, donut and black licorice at 31.5%. Well, I'll tell you what, I see a whole lot more pumpkin pie, lavender, donuts, and black licorice being sold maybe, huh? You know, it is interesting to see how smells impact us. And there's no doubt they can impact you and they can change your entire mood and make you think of other things. So in this particular case, these are the things you'll want to buy if you want to keep your man interested, I think. And that's number 15 on the list here. Number 14, men with mustaches make more money. I find this one kind of strange. A 2009 study found that mustached Americans earn 8.2% more on average than those with beards. And 4.3% more than clean-shaven. Now, I know beards definitely can turn some people off. I mean, I get that. Not that I'm not saying if you have a beard, that's bad, but I know some people say that's what studies say. But I wouldn't have guessed that a mustache is actually better than a clean-shaven face. I always learned young and early on in sales and stuff that it was always better to be clean-shaven. At least that's what they taught us, you know. Number 13 on the list. Want somebody to say yes? Nod your head. Now, I've done this in sales. When I was a kid selling encyclopedias or vacuum cleaners or whatever, when I was a young lad, this was good psychology, actually. Nods are contagious, and they spread good feelings. So if you nod your head as you ask your yes questions or as you listen to responses, others will begin to nod along and start to feel positive about what you're saying. And there is truth to that. Now, imagine that, you know, if you did the opposite of that and you started to nod your head no and you said yes, right? Well, that would be totally counterintuitive. I mean, you sit there and you look like a bumbling idiot, first of all, and it certainly wouldn't be effective. Now, listen, that may be somewhat effective, but getting them to take out their wallet to sign the check, it may take more than a nod of the head maybe, folks, you know? So, interesting. I'm going to jump ahead to number 11, micro expressions. You're using them wrong. Well, it says here the TV series Lie to Me made a big deal out of spotting micro expressions as a sign of deception. Well, according to Joe Navarro, a body language expert who worked with the FBI, the show got it all wrong. And so do professionals, he says. In fact, in over 268 cases, the officers got it 100% wrong because they were looking for signs of deception when they were merely seeing signs of psychological discomfort. That's interesting. And in many cases, this created by the officers themselves through aggressive techniques, it went on to say. Now, I find that very, very fascinating. But micro-expressions might be using them wrong here, after all. And if you want to look sexually experienced, get a tattoo. Wow. Well, a study in the Journal of Individual Differences. Can you believe there's a study in the Journal of Individual Differences? I like that. Found that people with tattoos are viewed as more thrill and adventure seeking, less inhibited, and more likely to have a higher number of previous sexual partners than their ink-free counterparts. So how many of you out there have a tattoo? Well, I'm not going to tell you if I have one or not. How's that? And number nine, and this one's got some truth to it. If you want someone to fall in love with you, gaze into their eyes. A study conducted in 1989 determined that simple eye contact could make a person fall in love with you. Well, in this study, two sexually compatible strangers were asked to gaze into each other's eyes for 2 minutes. In some cases, the participants reported passionate feelings about each other. I thought they were going to say in some instances that people went off and got married somewhere. I wasn't sure where they were going with that. But, you know, there is something about eyes, which is kind of why I think some people don't like to give eye contact. But think about the one you love. When you look into their eyes, you can discover a lot about a person when you look into their eyes. There's no doubt in my mind. I understand this one very well. I get it. You know, number eight, if you play with your hair, it means you might be receptive. Got to be careful. Specifically, they show a woman in the picture here, but I think it applies to anybody. So if you're out with a person and they're twirling their hair or playing with their jewelry, it doesn't mean they're distracted. It's a sign of romantic interest. I'm going to watch this one next time I'm out and see if people are playing with their hair. Interesting. And how can you tell if someone is lying? Well, number seven. Look for a contradiction in the body. You know, beyond the eyes and face, look for the torso to be turned away or twisted oddly. If a person's face is calm, but their hands or fingers are agitated, watch out. And pay attention to the legs and feet, it says. We already talked about the feet in one way. If a person's feet are pointed in an odd angle or their legs are crossed awkwardly, they might be lying. Good God, by the time you're done figuring out the body language, where they get their arms and their legs, are they pointed toward the door, as we talked about previously, and they want to get out of the meeting, or pointed toward you, and now if they're crossed awkwardly, they might be lying as well. That's a whole lot to handle, isn't it, folks? Huh? And number six, you can tell how open a person is, by their forehead. Now, I don't like the sound of this one, I have to be honest with you. This one I've read, and it kind of bothered me. It said, look at a person's forehead. Okay. Well, the more wrinkles they have, and the deeper those wrinkles are, the more open that person is likely to be. Oh, man, this one doesn't sound good. That's because a characteristic gesture of an open person is to raise their eyebrows, wrinkling in the forehead. Come on, folks. That means we all got to look old to be, you know, to be taken for real as honest? I don't like the sound of this one at all, man. I'm not going with it. I don't like number six. That one is, yeah. I don't know. So number five, when you're losing a game, act like you're winning. Now I've done this. This is kind of cool. There is body language associated with losing that most people can detect. Intuitively, in sports, this can cause a downward spiral for athletes on the losing side. Want to turn the game around? Square your shoulders, puff up your chest, and walk like a winner. Well, we could call that one the Donald Trump number five, because he's a winner. He always acts like a winner. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. And another one I would have never guessed, and I don't know if there's any truth to this, but number four, your finger length is linked to your hormone levels. If a man's ring finger and index finger are the same length, He might be gay. And I've heard this one before, actually. I never believed it. Check your fingers out and see if they're even. Your ring finger and index finger. If they're the same length, you may be gay. Now, if a woman's ring finger is noticeably longer than her pointer, then she might be gay as well. But her ring finger needs to be noticeably longer than her pointer. Okay, that's probably more information than we needed this afternoon, but that's okay. And number two, I'm going to jump to number two for time here. Is your date distracted? He or she just might be rich. And this one I've heard before. Studies have shown people with a high socioeconomic status are less engaged when it comes to conversation. They fidget and doodle rather than pay close attention to others. And I've seen that as being accurate. So I got to tell you, we got to say the winner. How can we not do the winner? You can dominate the conversation by moving forward. Well, that means you can take the lead in a conversation by leaning slightly forward. Then you want the other person to stop talking or use a hand gesture to take the public space between you. Okay? The gestural equivalent of standing up in a classroom to lead the group. So they say if you move forward, your body language, chances are better. That's kind of interesting. I find that quite fascinating. And listen, real quickly, another one I'm going to put up on the Twitter feed for you, which I like. Stop saying sorry and say thank you instead. And the few seconds we have here, I want to tell you, these are kind of cool. You got to check this one out. If you want to say, you want to say thank you for your patience instead of sorry, I'm always late. I like that. And if you want to say thank you for understanding me, that's better than saying sorry, I'm not making a lot of sense. Yeah, and if you want to say thank you for spending time with me, that's better than saying sorry, I'm kind of a drag. Yeah, and if you want to say thank you for listening, that's better than saying sorry, I'm just rambling. And at that point, we're going to stop the rambling right here. Thanks for joining me again. This is Real Life, my friends, on the brink of greatness. Check out Will Rame, also his Voyager series. I think you'll enjoy that, lifelessoncoaching.com. It's Malcolm Aloud here. Remember, get involved, get loud.